Hey! Hi! Hello, YouTube. Hello, Spotify. Hello, Apple Podcasts. Hello, TikTok. We're on TikTok live. We're live on YouTube. You're hearing this delayed if you're hearing it in the audio version, but hi, wherever you are. Welcome back. It's the thing again. Couldn't get Brave Dave to do part two, so we did part one like 2 weeks ago. Thought I would get right on part two. Didn't. Missed a week, then did a week with Amy Shaq Egan talking about love parties. Thought I'd have Brave Dave on this week. Couldn't get it. Couldn't get it scheduled. So now it's just me. But I've been wanting to do a mini-sode recently. There's been things I've been wanting to talk about. So here we go. Let's give it a shot, shall we? On all the different places. How are you? Welcome back. Before we get into, we got a lot to get into on the show today, but I want to do something we haven't done in a while. This is one of my favorite segments. This is Review the Review. I'm going to do a little pause there because in the audio version, I'm going to add in the
Review the Review
theme song for Review the Review. There is a theme song that you don't get if you're watching it live on TikTok or YouTube. You don't get the theme song. You only get that in the audio version. That's your little incentive to listen to it in the audio version. Unless you don't like it, then you can just keep watching it live. Whatever. But it's Review the Review. This is where you go to Apple Podcasts and you leave a 5-star review for the show and you write a review. And then I read your review on the show and I review your review back. Okay? Does that make sense? You go to Apple Podcasts, you leave this show a 5-star review. It has to be 5 stars or I'm not even going to look at it. You leave a review, I read it, I review you back. So the first one here is from N. Sellon. N-S-E-L-L-O-N. N. Sellon? Sellon. I don't know how to pronounce it. 5-star review. And it reads, I am so glad you make content. Full stop. That's it. This is a great review. This is a fantastic review. It's concise. It's simple. It's nice. I want to give a quick reminder to everyone listening that you don't have to write nice things for Review the Review. You can write whatever you want to write. If you give me a 5-star review, I will read whatever it is that you write. But this person was being nice, and I like that they just were like, that's all I got to say. Is I'm just happy that you're doing it. And sometimes that's all I need to hear. I get very, very tired, very fatigued sometimes, very burnt out. I feel from time to time like, does anyone even care that I'm still doing this? Is anyone even paying attention still? Am I still bringing anything relevant to the table? Is there still a point in me doing this? And then someone's like, I'm glad you're doing it. This person is. So I'm like, okay, well, at least they are. So thank you for that review. One more. This is from Eric Leach _ art. Eric Leach is an illustrator that I met recently. He reached out to me on my birthday and said, hey, for your birthday, Austin, I will draw you anything that you want me to draw. And I said, draw me riding a tiger fighting a robot. And he drew the most badass comic book illustration of me riding a tiger, fighting a robot, wearing a turtleneck and blazer with some sunnies up on my head. I look very cool. I look a lot cooler in that than I do in this current video that I'm doing right now. I look like a guy who's like been struggling to get out of bed at a reasonable hour. And who's been like having some mental health hiccups. And I have been. And that's what I look like right now. I don't look like Eric Leach's really, really cool illustration of me. Anyway, what Eric Leach said in his review is, Austin and his guests do a great job of balancing an easy listening experience that is approachable and inviting, along with content that can be deep, insightful, provokes thought, and may help you see things from a new perspective. Great job. What I'm going to say about this review, first of all, it's very nice. And second of all, go check out Eric Leach on Instagram and TikTok. He does really good art and he drew me a really, really cool drawing. So thank you, Eric. But what I'm going to say about this review that's really, really cool is Eric has a semicolon in this review. He wrote, do a great job of balancing an easy listening experience that is approachable and inviting, semicolon, along with content that can be deep, insightful, provokes thought, and may help you see things from a new perspective. And I'm going to tell you guys right now, I have no idea whether he used the semicolon correctly or incorrectly. I will never know how to use a semicolon correctly. I won't learn it. You could explain it to me every day from now to the end of my life, and I will still always just sort of like take like autocorrect's word for it. And I don't take autocorrect's word for anything. Autocorrect is wrong all the time. But when I'm typing something in like Microsoft Word or something like that, and it automatically suggests a semicolon to me, I'm like, that's fine. I'm going to trust you that there should be a semicolon there, because I have no idea. And there's no way to know, to be honest. There's no actual way to know when a semicolon is warranted. So what I want to say to Eric Leach is I have no idea if that was an appropriate semicolon or not, but I respect the hell out of you for just taking the leap, for just jumping in there and being like, I think a semicolon goes here, and I'm doing it, and I'm dropping it in there. And like, the thing about using a semicolon is like, I dare anyone to call you out on it. Everyone's going to call you out if you fuck up your and your, or if you fuck up there, and there, or two, two, and two. Everyone's going to call you out and be petty about it, but nobody has the balls to be like, a semicolon doesn't go there, you dipshit. Because everyone knows that none of us know. Everyone's like, if you use a semicolon, everyone just instantly thinks that you're smarter than them. They're like, whoa, so you use that semicolon, which means you must know where semicolons go, which means, damn. Like, shit, I gotta get my shit together. I'm 35 years old. I gotta figure out where semicolons go. But the reality is, like, Eric doesn't know either. He just was like, I'm putting the semicolon here. I'm fairly certain it should go there. It feels right. It looks good. Me reading it, I didn't question it for a second. I just thought, whoa, semicolon. Semicolon. Okay. Okay. Add to that list full-on colons. Like, when? 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 I remember growing up, they told me full-on colon at the top of a letter when it says, like, dear. You would be like, dear, colon, and then you would write your letter. Nobody does that. But we would do stuff like that. They'd be like, yeah, start the page with, like, the person's name, full-on colon, full-on symbol on a digital clock between the numbers, boop, boop, then do your thing. No, that's not what that is. I feel like I use a full-on colon when it's like the title of a thing that I'm going to write a note about. So it's like grocery list, colon, then the list underneath. I'm fairly certain about that usage. Could be 100% wrong. We'll never know. Can never know. And it's okay. So props to you for using the semicolon in that very fancy review. Let's get into the show, shall we? we have a lot of just like not funny, not fun, not cool stuff to talk about on the show tonight. So you are in for a treat. We're going to start here with a clip from friggin' Meet the Press. This is a few weeks ago. Spencer Cox, who's the governor of my home state, Utah, went on Meet the Press to defend an anti-trans bill that he let pass through his state's legislature that denies trans kids access to gender-affirming care. It's just one of hundreds of bills introduced by the GOP in this year, just in 2023, targeting trans youth and queer kids. And this is Spencer Cox on why that bill isn't a pile of shit.
The total number of people who identify as trans in America is 0.5%. Yeah. And you've made this point when you vetoed a previous bill that had to do with trying to ban trans individuals from participating in sports. How do you stop? It's mostly coming from your party. We saw there's over 299 bills that have been introduced, two-thirds of them this year alone, two-thirds of them target trans people. And again, 0.5%. Yeah. You just made the point yourself. What is this obsession?
Well, I think it is a growing number. In fact, it's a vastly growing number. If you go back just 10 years ago and look at the numbers, and here's the problem. This has become such a toxic issue mm-hmm. that it's hard to have a rational conversation around it. I actually had to look outside the United States.
Hold on. We're going to stop right there. Just talk about this first thing. You know, first of all, just the fact that, like, his first defense is like, well, it's a growing number. There's more people. There's more. If you just go back 10 years. And yeah, it is true. And people like to say this all the time. Like, there's more of them. There's more transes and they, thems and non-binaries. And, like, you know, people always talk about, like, left-handedness. How for the longest time we viewed left-handedness as a sign of, like, being possessed by the devil because people are fucking stupid. Because human beings, I don't know if you knew this, are just, like, dumb. We're really, really smart, but we're also, like, so superstitious and stupid, and we believe stupid things. And so because we thought that people who were left-handed were, like, witches or possessed by the devil, a lot of left-handed people were like, well, I'm not going to tell anyone that I'm left-handed. And then once we were like, I don't think that being left-handed means that you're possessed by the devil. I think it's fine to be left-handed. More people were like, that's great, because I've been left-handed this whole time and just doing stuff with my right hand, and it's been really hard. So thank you for letting me be left-handed. And everyone was like, yeah, I think it's fine if you're left-handed. So, like, yeah, when society gets more cool with the fact that, like, trans people exist and have always existed and that that's fine, naturally, more trans people are like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and be trans then if it's cool now, if it's cool for me to exist now, I'm going to go ahead and do that. And then people are like, how come there's more of them now? It's like, well, because before you had structured society so that, like, almost none of them wanted to come out. So that's why it's not rocket science. But then he goes on to this thing of saying, like, this has become such a toxic issue. And what I really hate about this clip from Spencer Cox is how much he tries to present himself as just being like, I'm not the bad guy here. This has just become a really toxic issue. It's this culture war issue, and we can't even talk about it. And it's like, why is it toxic, Spence? Who did that? And the implication from what Spencer Cox is saying is that it is a bipartisan problem of why it's become toxic. That, like, we can't even have a conversation about it because people on the left get so upset when we try to have a rational conversation about it. And it's become so toxic. They just yell at you and they call you a bigot and you can't, you know. And then people on the right, there's a lot of people who are like, well, we kind of want them to not exist and we kind of want them to all die. And we kind of think that they're evil and that they're all going to burn in hell. And it's just on both sides. It's so toxic. And it's like, I just want to state this unequivocally. I get a lot of flack from friends and people who show up in my comments and things like that who are on the right who say, like, you're so sure of yourself. You have all these hardline stances that you're so sure of, that you're so black and white on. How can you be so sure of yourself when tens of millions of people are just as sure of their position that you're completely wrong? Don't you think that there's a possibility that the reality lies somewhere in the middle and that there's more complexity to this? And this is what I want to state unequivocally is, like, I don't have hardline stances on, like, what policy would be best for the economy, what policy would be best to tackle climate change, what policy would be best to see effective reform in policing. I think that these things need to be addressed, but I'm not an expert on any of these things, and I don't have hardline stances on how they should be addressed. The only things that I have hardline stances are human rights issues. When it just comes to, like, should we grant these people basic human dignity and basic human respect? I'm like, that's non-negotiable, and I'm not interested in having a nuanced back and forth discussion on the merits of both sides with you. So when it seems like I'm being toxic about this issue because I'm not willing to debate with you on whether or not we should consider trans people and whether or not we should treat them like human beings, I just don't see it as a both sides thing, as just like, oh, we're both being so toxic. I'm like, no, I see you as advocating for genocide and me as advocating for not that. And me as just saying, like, no, absolutely not. And that's not negotiable. I'm not going to negotiate with you over the merits of like whether a person's life is valid, whether a person's like existence is valid in that body, in that whatever state they find themselves in. So it's so frustrating to hear him trying to be so level-headed and being like, this issue's become so toxic. And it's like, because of you, because you are trying to debate whether or not people should deserve basic human dignity.
To get data, I looked at what happened in Sweden. Look what happened in Finland. Look what the French are saying about this. The explosion that they're seeing in those numbers, and some concerns about this. It's not just about national conversation.
So again, I'm looking at what happened in these other countries, and I'm like, what happened? What happened, Spencer? And all he's talking about is the explosion of the numbers. More people came out. More people came out as trans, and like that's his concern. That's his number one concern. I'm like, what happened? Did something bad happen to the societies there? Did they collapse and crumble? Did they ignite in flames and demons took over the populace? Like, what happened that was negative? And all he's talking about is just more people. More people came out as non-binary. More people expressed gender fluidity. More people expressed that the rigid gender binary didn't work for them. He has yet to demonstrate how that's a problem for those societies.
Concerns about this. It's not just about providing care or not providing care. It's about whether we might potentially be harming young people, not having enough evidence to see what the long-term results of this are, and providing better psychiatric help for those young people who are going through this.
But you took this power away from parents.
Okay. So what he says there, it's not about, you know, giving them access to care or not giving them access to care. It's about the fact that we just don't know. We don't know what the long-term effects of this are. So that's really the big concern here that that Spencer Cox is positing. And what I really want to talk about tonight is all the different ways. So first of all, the big overarching thing that we're talking about on the show tonight is the fact that, like, the GOP has made it clear that their mission for the 2024 presidential campaign and for this next big push of, you know, legislation and campaigning and what they want to do in the presidential race and what they're going to be doing for the next few years, that their big mission is to target the queer community, that this is what they're going after. Donald Trump did his speech where he said, we are going to go after gender ideology. We are going to make sure that trans women can't compete in women's sports, although he didn't say it like that. He said, we're going to make sure that men can't compete in women's sports, because of course he did, because he's awful. But this has been the big target. So in this clip, they talked about how 299 bills just this year have been introduced by the GOP targeting the queer community, specifically trans people. And now the ACLU is tracking up to 321 bills. It's over 300. And Spencer Cox here is saying, like, we just don't know. And so, sorry. So what I want to talk about is the fact that, like, this is the number one thing on the agenda for the GOP going into the 2024 election. But what I really want to talk about is all the different ways that they are succeeding in selling this disgusting agenda to Americans on both sides of the political spectrum, because they are succeeding right now in selling this agenda to reasonable people, to people who in many other aspects of their life are very progressive and socially liberal. They are selling this idea that we're going too far with gender ideology, that we're going too far with toying with the rigid gender binary. And Spencer Cox, so he's introducing one of the first tactics that they use. And Spencer Cox is sort of this guy who seems like he's just, hey, I'm not a bigot. I don't hate anybody. We just don't know enough about the long-term effects of what this does to young people, what hormone replacement therapy or any kind of gender-affirming care does for young people. We don't know enough about the long-term effects. So many of the things that the Republican Party and the conservatives in general use to get you on their side when it comes to this particular issue are surface level arguments that seem intuitively correct without any further investigation. So what he's hoping to do with this stance of, like, we don't have conclusive data on the long-term effects of what HRT does to a 12-year-old. Like, we don't know. Without further investigation, you could hear that and go, you know, that's a good point. It's a good point. We might be putting the cart before the horse on some of this stuff. We might be moving too quickly. We might be acting a little too rash here. Maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves, and in 20 or 30 years, we're going to find out that we actually did a lot of damage and that we should have slowed down and we should have waited to gather more data. That's what he's hoping. He's hoping you'll stop there. He's hoping that, like, you have some existing underlying discomfort with trans and non-binary people that you haven't examined, and that he's going to give you, with this surface level argument that feels intuitively correct, a reason to go, you know what, that's a good point. Maybe we should push the brakes a little bit. The problem with this whole argument, again, is like, think about it a little bit more, go further, just do a little bit of like cursory investigation, because here's what we do know, and here's what we do have long-term data on. What we do know is that denying young people access to gender-affirming care and denying young people access to a welcoming and supportive home environment that supports their identity is detrimental to those people. We have that data. So saying we don't know what the long-term effects are of validating a young person's identity. We don't know what the effects are of that. Maybe we don't. I think that we actually do. I think that we actually have enough grown queer people who were raised in supportive households growing up who supported their identities to know that the data is pretty conclusive that, like, being supportive of your child and accepting them for who they are and allowing them to express their identity in an authentic way and giving them a supportive environment to grow up in and fostering a supportive environment is leagues more healthy for that person than telling them, no, 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 you are not that. You're not gay. You're not bisexual. You're not non-binary. You're not trans. And if you are, we're going to have a problem. In fact, I might kick you out of this house and you might not be welcome back in this home. We know the difference between those two approaches. We, for all of modern history, we've been doing the other approach. So this whole idea of like, we just got to pump the brakes and just see. We got to just wait and see. We don't, the data's not in yet. It's not conclusive yet. It's like, well, but we know what the other method is. We already know what the other way is. And we know that it's massively detrimental to these people, to these kids. So I don't understand that. He goes on to say, this clip is like not working for me. And I wanted to play him speaking it so that no one could accuse me of taking his words out of context. But just trust me that this is what he goes on to say. You can look up the clip if you want on your own. He goes on to say in that clip, he goes, look, I understand that there are people on my side of the aisle who don't have their best interests at heart, who don't have the best interests of trans kids and queer kids at heart. I understand that there are some people on my side of the aisle who want to do them harm. He says that. And he says that to try to be sort of, again, like a reasonable person who's trying to meet us in the middle here and have a sincere discussion about this. But he says, but also there are people on the other side of the aisle who I think might be going too far with it, who also might not have their best interest at heart. And what's so insidious about this, again, this is another one of those tactics that is used to convince you to get down with the message. This idea of like, hey, I'm willing to admit that there are people on my side of the aisle who maybe are, you know, full-throated bigots who really do just hate gay people and trans people and non-binary people. I'm willing to admit that, and who don't have their best interests at heart. And I'm not one of those people, but I'm willing to admit that they exist on my side of the aisle. First of all, that's a really wild thing to just go ahead and say. Like, I'm willing to fully admit that I am teaming up with people who are full-on bigots to write this legislation. I'm not one of them, but I'm willing to admit that they are my teammates. But the reason why he does that is to be like, are you willing to admit that there are people on your side who are maybe taking it a little too far, though? Who are maybe like pushing kids to go into an identity that maybe they're not ready to embrace, but their parents are like really pushing them to be non-binary or pushing them to be trans? Can't we admit that there are people on both sides that are going too far? And that is a surface level position that is meant to feel intuitively correct to you. That you're meant to go, well, this guy's willing to admit that there are people on his side that maybe don't have their best interest. Maybe I can meet him halfway and admit that there are people on my side too, who maybe are being a little too rash. This is, again, just like the thing of just saying, hey, you know, just like, We don't know. We don't know what the... Couldn't you just admit that? This whole issue has become so toxic. Can't we just talk about this? Like two reasonable people? And it's like, no. No. Because here's the problem. Again, so... What I need from Spencer Cox when he says that, when he says, hey, I fully admit that there are people on my side who don't have their best interests at heart. There are also people on the other side who don't have their best interests at heart. What I need immediately after that, and the guy doing the interview didn't ask this question. I don't know, maybe he did. But what I need immediately after that is for someone to say, prove it. Prove it. Demonstrate how. I need you to demonstrate to me how the left is just as harmful to trans and non-binary and gay people as the modern right is. I need you to prove it. Demonstrate how. Show me which policies, which beliefs, which ideals of the left are just as harmful to the queer community as the ideals and the policies and the legislation being proposed by the right. I need you to demonstrate that. Not just say it as a thing that's meant to feel intuitively correct of like, well, I guess, yeah, it could be true that both sides are right and wrong about certain things. Again, human rights, human dignity, non-negotiable. This is not a both sides thing. This is not a give and take thing. This is you're either on the team of supporting human dignity and human rights and treating people like people and giving people respect, or you're not. It's really, really cut and dry. So I need you to demonstrate to me how. Where is the harm being done? Where are the bills? Show me a bill being presented, a bill of legislation being put forward by Democrats right now that harms, that actively is harmful to trans people, to queer people, to gay people. Show me a bill. Even if you could show me one, even if you could pull up one and say, hey, this bill right here that they're proposing harms this community in this way. The score as it sits right now for the year 2023 would be 1-321 on the other side. 321 bills attacking this community versus one. And I don't think that one exists. I don't think there is one. So this is that thing where when I hear it, I'm like, prove it. Show me. Whenever I hear people saying, come on, both sides are ridiculous. My first thought always is prove it. You show me how. Show me what on the left is as ridiculous as Marjorie Taylor Greene saying that the government gave $5.1 billion in COVID money to a single school to teach them critical race theory. Show me on the left what is as ridiculous, that it's just as insane, it's just as unhinged from reality, it's just as crazy as when everyone on the right for like an entire year and a half was pushing the story that schools had litter boxes in their classrooms for kids who identify as cats to pee into. A thing that just no one had ever seen. No one had ever seen a picture of it. No one had ever seen a video of it. No one had ever seen any evidence to support that claim. And yet everyone was pushing this story on the right. Everyone from talking heads on conservative media, on the news outlets to politicians, everyone was saying this as though it was established fact that schools had litter boxes so that kids who identify as cats could pee in them. And that was just not true. It just wasn't a real thing. What on the left is the same as that? So when I hear people say, "It's well, come on, there's things on both sides. Prove it. Show it to me. What is the left's QAnon? What is the left equivalent to a bunch of people thinking that JFK Jr. is going to come back from the dead and be Donald Trump's running mate in 2024? What is the equivalent of that? The whole both sides thing, the whole both sides thing is another thing that is intended to make you feel like you're being more reasonable. It's saying to you, come on, what's more likely, that one side is completely insane and the other side is like pretty reasonable and rational, or that both sides are pretty insane and that the truth lies somewhere in the middle? This is a surface level argument intended to feel intuitively correct without further inspection. And the unfortunate reality is that we are in a situation where one half of our political and ideological divide has completely lost the plot on reality. It doesn't mean that the left doesn't have issues and doesn't have problems. It just means that when the left has issues and problems and their issues are still rooted in an objective, in an objective, observable, demonstrable reality. And when the right has issues and problems, we have to address the fact that the issue and the problem is around something that doesn't even exist before we can even get into how absurd what they're dealing with is. That like they're debating something or talking about something that does not exist, that can't be demonstrated. So I don't know. I just, when, you know, when he says that, but there are people on the other side who don't have their best interests at heart. I'm like, show me, prove it. What he means when he says that, and I believe that he believes this, I believe that in his heart he believes that this is correct. What he means is that people on the left who are being overzealous in the way that they support and defend people in the LGBTQIA plus community might be doing harm by pushing kids to transition earlier than they are ready to, or pushing kids to come out as gay or bisexual, and later in life they might think, you know what, I don't know if I was, or if I was doing that because it was like trendy or cool. This is a thing that apparently a lot of conservatives think, is that like, we've come so far on the issue of accepting queer people in society that it's now like super cool and trendy and not at all difficult to come out as queer. I want them to understand, and I want you to understand if you're listening to this podcast or watching this show right now, that even though we've made strides in like increasing representation of queer people in movies and TV shows, and even though we've made strides in like making sure that we have more public figures who are from this community, and that like there's more representation and there's more visibility, and that we have more acceptance right now than we've ever had at any other time in American history or in modern history, even though strides have been made, it is still an incredibly difficult thing to come out in today's world, because we still live in a world with tens of millions of people who really, really, really dislike people from that community and wish to do them real demonstrable harm. So it's not just like it's this cool thing to just come out as gay all of a sudden and because there's a few more gay people on TV. It's still like you still have to live in a world where one of the two main political parties in America is doing everything they can to take your rights away every single day. So yeah, so again, Spencer Cox thinks, you know, that the harm that might be done is that we might be pushing kids to do things that they're not quite ready to do. And this is another one of the tactics that they're using to go after you and to get you as a otherwise liberal, otherwise progressive person on their team for their agenda coming up for the 2024 election, is this idea that we really have to watch out for how quickly we're pushing this stuff on kids, and that we're not toying with kids' heads, and like we're not pushing kids into doing something that they're not ready to do. This is one of those ideas that when it's presented to you, the way it's presented often seems intuitively correct. We shouldn't be messing with kids. We should be letting kids be kids and sort of discover themselves organically. So Libs of TikTok, this terrible TikTok or Twitter account, that's just a straight up hate account that, you know, I think was banned, and then Elon Musk took over and gave them their platform back. They recently tweeted out something that was retweeted by Ben Shapiro and Matt Walsh and all the usual suspects. But what their tweet said was, this mom transed her 2-year-old son because he liked to dress up in dresses and makeup. That's how they labeled it, is that a mom transed her 2-year-old son because he liked to dress up in dresses and makeup, and that he was 2 years old when she did it. The comments are just full of people who very clearly don't watch the video that Libs of TikTok tweeted, a video of this mom explaining her journey with her child and with her daughter, and how they supported her daughter in her transition and how that all came about. And in the video, she just explains that it started when her daughter was 2. It started as early as 2, and that over the course of several years of watching their daughter continue to go back to this behavior of like always wanting to wear dresses, always wanting to play with girls' toys, telling her parents in no uncertain terms that she was a girl, She and her husband talked about several different options of what they could do. They tried to put their daughter into a T-ball league that her husband coached, and she hated it. She hated wearing her uniform and going and playing with the other boys, and she would scream and cry and throw a tantrum every time she had to go do it. And they were really trying to push her toward more gender norms for boys. They were really trying as a husband and wife to push their child to be more like a boy. And they even told their daughter that she could wear girl clothes, a sports bra and leggings underneath her boy T-ball outfit. And that helped her feel more comfortable to go out and play T-ball with the boys. And as soon as the game was over, she would always take her outfit off and get right into her leggings and her sports bra. And she would tell her parents over and over and over again, I'm a girl, I'm a girl. And finally, after years of this behavior, they finally just went, we've tried so many different things to push our daughter in the direction of being a boy. We're just going to try accepting that what she's telling us. And like so many other parents have reported, they noticed an instant shift that their daughter became instantly so much happier, so much more comfortable in her own skin, so much more alive and vibrant, and they didn't have this fight anymore of constantly trying to convince their daughter that she was something that she wasn't. So she wasn't two. She wasn't a two-year-old who put on a dress one day, and then this mom transed her because she liked to put on a dress at 2 years old. This was an event that happened over years and years and years. Libs of TikTok, of course, lies about it. And it's a lie that you can just watch the video that they tweeted and just instantly see, like, oh, they lied. They just disingenuously framed the story so that it would sound to anyone who doesn't watch the video like, what? She transed a two-year-old? No, she didn't. She doesn't actually say in the video what age her daughter was when she started to finally accept her as a girl, but she does say that it went on for years. So we can assume it's sometime around 6 or 7 after this had been going on for 4 or 5 years, you know? 4 or 5 years of trying to push back and say, like, no, 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 let's find another avenue of how we can approach this, and then finally going, all right, what happens if we just accept her as she is? What happens if we do that? And that seemed to work for them as a family and for their daughter. But libs of TikTok can engage with this conversation in an honest way, because if they do, they won't have fucking anything. So this is another thing that's intended to get you. They're doing this for you. They're doing this so that you just see that headline and go like, oh, see, this is what Spencer Cox is talking about. Is people on the left taking it too far? Pushing this stuff on a two-year-old who doesn't even know what they are? And the comments are full of people who clearly didn't watch the video. Who obviously didn't watch the video, saying stuff like, you know, oh yeah, well, you know, last week my kid thought that they were Spider-Man, and this week they were convinced that they were Batman. Good thing I didn't change their identity to Spider-Man. People love making these jokes. Har, har, har. My pronouns are attack helicopter. Har, har, har. This one joke that conservatives have, you know. And these kind of straw man arguments of like, well, my kid thought that they were Spider-Man. Should I have accepted that? Little kids think that they're all kinds of things. The reason why this is a straw man argument is because we don't have an epidemic of people in this world who are dying by suicide because society refused to accept them as being Batman. That's not a thing that's actually happening. We don't actually have that problem. We don't have the problem of millions of people saying, hey, I'm actually Spider-Man, and then society saying, fuck you, no, you're not. You're not Spider-Man, and if you say you're Spider-Man, we are going to be violently opposed to that, and then resulting in those people having really, really hard lives and dying by suicide. That's not a real thing that we're dealing with. That's not a problem. Because we understand that that is just kind of how kids make believe. But we do have the very real problem, and have had for a very long time, of just for as long as there have been people who have said, pretty sure I was born in a body that doesn't align with the gender that I actually am, and that I'm actually this other thing. Pretty sure the rigid gender binary doesn't actually suit me and doesn't fit me and doesn't actually work for who I actually am. And that's a real thing. Those people really exist. This is what's so insidious about this particular agenda from the right. And what's so scary about it is at the core of all of this, at the bottom of all of this, what this all boils down to is whether or not you're okay with the reality, with the objective, observable, demonstrable reality that gay and trans people and non-binary people exist and always have existed. What the Republican Party, what the right is at war with right now, and what they are attacking right now, is the existence of these people. They are not willing to grapple with and deal with the fact that these people exist. And it's honestly baffling to me, because that is the issue. Is it's just like, look, whether you get it or not, whether you understand it or not, whether it makes sense to you or not, what it must feel like to have a body that does not reflect how you feel about yourself on the inside, whether that makes sense to you or not, it is a real experience that millions of people are having. It's real. We know it's real. It's real. And that's what you're at war with. Is like you're unwilling to just accept this as what it is. There are just people who are left-handed. Whether that makes sense to you or not, whether all you've ever known is the intuitive need to want to do things with your right hand, doesn't make sense how a person could want to do something with their left hand. It just doesn't work in your brain. You don't get it, but it doesn't matter, because left-handed people exist. And that's what you're at war with. That's what you are fighting with, is the idea of these people existing. And that's why it is not hyperbole at all to say what I'm about to say, which is the result of this agenda is nothing short of genocide. What is being proposed by the Republican Party moving into the 2024 election, and with all of this legislation that they're putting forward, is full-on erasure, is getting rid of the existence of these people. So when you tell them the result of your policies, and we know this, the data is in, the numbers are in, the result of your policies, the result of your ideology, the result of the way that you treat these people is that these people die. These people are harmed. These people are hurt deeply. These people are attacked. These people are shot at, beaten. And these people do harm to themselves. That is the result. And when they are told that, that is not a deterrent for them to continue doing what they're doing. That does not make them go, ooh, geez, maybe we should slow the brakes. That all they hear is, then it's working. Then that means it's working. Because the goal here is to not have to live in a world where they have to come to terms with the existence of these people. That is what they are unwilling to do. And that is the result of having half the political apparatus completely detached from reality. When half the political apparatus is going around talking about kids peeing in litter boxes in schools, which is a thing that's not happening, and that's what they're occupying their time talking about and occupying their constituents' time talking and thinking about, is things that aren't happening. When they are completely unmoored from reality, and all we're trying to do is get them to engage with reality, what they wind up doing is launching attacks on reality in their legislation. What the left is saying is, hey, these people exist. They've always existed, and they need our help. And they need us to help them. Gender-affirming care for trans people saves lives. Period. Period. They need our help. They've been asking for our help for a very long time. We want to help them now. We want to finally show up for them. And what they're saying is, absolutely not, because I don't want to live in a world where I have to reckon with the fact that these people are real, that it's a real thing. So making that straw man argument of, oh, so if my kid says that they're Spider-Man, should I accept that? Boiling it down to just some silly delusion that they'll grow out of, even though that's not a one-to-one comparison, okay? Because there aren't people who just spend their entire life going like, no, I'm Spider-Man. And here's the thing is, I want to even go into the thought experiment of like, let's do this. Let's do this as a thought experiment. Let's go into like, what if it is the same thing? What if it is a full-on delusion? What if it is what they say it is? This is the other argument that they'll use, is that it's a mental illness. That it's mental illness. We shouldn't indulge people's mental illnesses. People like Ben Shapiro, people like Matt Walsh will say that it's disgusting, that it's amoral to indulge someone's mental illness, to indulge someone's delusion of who they are. Now, let's go down that path as a thought experiment with them. Let's give it to them and say, okay, let's say that it's mental illness. What would be the circumstances under which it would no longer be beneficial to allow a person to live with delusional beliefs? I think we would all agree that what the circumstances that would need to be necessary is that person would need to be a danger to themselves or others, right? That's what would need to be able to be demonstrated, is that whatever delusion this person is having, whatever delusional thinking this person is having, whatever dissociative episode this person is having, whatever potentially psychotic episode this person is having, in order for some kind of intervention to be made, if we are going to intervene on their behalf and treat them medicinally with meds or institutionalize them, what we would normally want to see in that situation is that the result of their dissociative episode or their delusion is that they are a harm to themselves or others. So we can see this when a person has, let's say a person with, bipolar disorder has a manic episode where they believe that they're, hearing messages through the TV that are telling them to kill their next door neighbor or something like that. And they go and tell their doctor like, hey, I think I might be having, and we can see demonstrably like, okay, we've got a situation where some form of intervention might be necessary to save this person from themselves. Just like I said with Spencer Cox, with the prove it, with show me, is like, I want to say to Ben Shapiro and all these people, show me, prove to me, demonstrate to me how allowing a trans person to exist as a trans person and to exist authentically in the gender that makes them feel authentically like themselves, demonstrate to me how that makes that person a danger to themselves or others. Show me the data on that. Because what we do have, again, is data that denying these people access to that life, that authenticity, denying them access to be able to live authentically and be seen authentically, is massively detrimental to these people and to these communities. We do have that data. We do know that the opposite is very detrimental to them. We don't have a lot of data showing that that allowing them to simply just live authentically in their own skin is harmful to them. In fact, we have the opposite of that. Most of the data shows that it's massively beneficial to them. So even if in this thought experiment, we go down the road of saying it's some sort of mental disorder, it's some sort of, and you know what, at the bottom of it, it's like, fucking what isn't, everything is some kind of, neurodivergency, some form of being atypically, neurally wired, but even if that's what we say it is, to just leave it again, this is a surface level intuitive argument of, oh, come on, you can't indulge people's mental illness. That's immoral. That's disgusting. You can't indulge people's mental illness. Leaving it there, that is meant to hit your ear as, good point. Jeez, good point. We're just indulging people's mental illnesses. Well, hold on, go a little bit deeper. Why not? Why can't you? Why would it be a bad idea to do that? Okay, it would be a bad idea if that person was a harm to themselves or others. But what if the thing that we are classifying as a mental illness is actually massively beneficial to this person? It's actually funny that people like Ben Shapiro and Matt Walsh say these arguments, because we all in society are massively indulgent of their delusions. And I'm talking about religion. We are massively indulgent of huge swaths of the human population who have absolutely batshit ideas and beliefs. And we just go like, hey, as long as you're not hurting anybody else, and as long as it's not hurting you, go ahead. Even though we have like so much data to show that so many religious beliefs are massively harmful to the believers and to people who aren't even part of the church, that people are constantly using their religious delusions to hurt other people. And like, We still indulge these people. And the only reason we indulge them is because they're such a massive part of the population. It would be so difficult to oppress. Like, whenever Christians claim that they're oppressed in America, it's like, as if we fucking could. There are so fucking many of you. We couldn't if we wanted to. We wouldn't be able to oppress you if we wanted to. But the queer community is small enough. They're marginalized enough. They're historically disenfranchised enough that it is, that they are actually vulnerable to being systematically oppressed and systematically beat up on. So even if, you know, at one point, you know, homosexuality was pathologized. It was part of the DSM as like a mental health disorder. It no longer is. But even if we accepted that definition, and I don't think we should, I'm not saying we should. I don't think that it is a mental disorder that needs to be treated. And I don't think that being transgender is a mental disorder that needs to be treated. But even if we go down that avenue, I would say, well, all the data shows us that allowing these people to live the way that they want to live, to simply exist, is beneficial for them. That's what the data shows us. So why would we take it away from them? There is no benefit to taking it away from them. All the data shows us that taking it away from them, that restricting them, that oppressing them is harmful to them. And it's so fucking funny because we allow you to be super duper crazy with your religious beliefs. We give you all kinds of grace and all kinds of space to believe the most insane, unfounded things that cannot be demonstrated with any kind of objective evidence. We allow you to do that, even though those things seem to be harmful to you and to others. And yet you can't allow these people to have their beliefs about themselves that you don't fully understand, even though those beliefs literally don't do anything to you. So really, again, what these people are at war with at the very bottom of it, plain and simple, is reality. The reality that trans and queer people exist. They do not want these people to exist. That is not a hyperbolic or controversial statement. That is not me reading between the lines about on their policy. That is not me projecting forward of what the end result of this is. That is literally what is happening here. Is people literally writing legislation and crafting arguments intended to get you on board with systematic genocide, with erasing these people from existence. That's what's at stake. And I know that that's not fun to hear. And I know that that's kind of scary and that that's kind of fucked up, but that is what's happening. Okay, I'm feeling very like tired right now just by how wild it is to watch this happening in slow motion. That we are just seeing this unfold right in front of our eyes. And that it's working. That so many of their arguments and their positions are working. That's why I did an entire episode about trans women in sports and about why I think that you're probably wrong about trans women in sports, because they got so many of you with that thing. They got so many of you. That's the other thing that they do, is painting trans people, specifically trans women, as nothing more than predatory men who want to pretend to be women so that they can access women-only spaces to prey on women, whether that's by stealing trophies from women in sports and beating up on them and you know, winning all the competitions, or by sexually assaulting women in like changing rooms and things and bathrooms and things like that. So again, this is a surface level argument that is meant to be feel intuitively correct. Well, come on, you don't want men to just be able to dress up like women and go into women's spaces and prey on women, right? You got a daughter who wants to play soccer. You don't want her to get beat up on the soccer field by a boy in a wig, right? You don't want that, right? Right? Yeah, well, you know, here's the big thing about that is like, that's not a, it's just the scale of it. It's just not realistic. Most of the states that are introducing anti-trans bills where they're trying to ban trans girls from participating in women's sports have like one or two trans girls in their schools who are trying to compete. So it's like a statewide thing where there are like millions of girls competing in high school sports and they've got like one or two trans girls trying to compete, and they're introducing entire bills meant to systematically subjugate and marginalize these girls on the basis of this argument that essentially is like, you got to do this to defend your daughters. You don't want your daughters to have to like lose their trophy to some boy who stole their trophy, right? And it's working. They're getting you. They're convincing you of it. And what they're actually convincing you of, and most of you don't realize it because most of you will be like, hey, look, I support trans rights. I support trans people. I love trans people. I just don't want my daughter to have to play sports against a trans girl. And what you don't realize is they're getting you. They're getting you there. They are getting you on board with the genocide. They're getting you to be on board. Because now you're going to find yourself arguing against people who are going to bat for trans girls and trans women and saying, hey, trans women are women. Trans women deserve to be able to compete in women's sports. Sports, people who participate in sports have like this whole, they'll try to come after you with the scientific thing. Oh, well, here's how someone who was assigned male at birth's muscles actually process acid. And here, you know, and all this stuff. They've been trying to use science to justify bigotry for as long as science has existed. They've always been using science to justify some kind of societal marginalization, some kind of societal prejudice. And it's always been a bad faith thing that's been intended to get reasonable people on the side of bigotry, on the side of genocide. Because that whole thing, you should go listen to my episode where I talk about trans women in sports, but it's just kind of like, yeah, scientifically, Shaquille O'Neal, is a much better built athlete than Muggsy Bogues. Muggsy Bogues was 5'1", 137 pounds, or 5'3", 137 pounds. Shaquille O'Neal was 7 feet, 325 pounds. They played in the NBA at the same time. Like, why was that fair? Because they both had a dick? Like, nothing actually holds up. And by the way, we're talking about just a minuscule percentage of women. The trans women, like the trans women that are trying to compete in sports, it's like a handful of women worldwide. And when people go like, oh, well, we should have their own category. Trans women should just have their own category. It's like, do you understand there would be like 30 women competing against each other across the world? Do you understand that that's what that would look like? And also that that's not a solution? That having like, no, it's okay. Black people can have schools that they can go to. They'll just be like a different school. No, black people can have drinking fountains. They'll have a public drinking fountain. They'll just have their own public drinking fountain and their own public restroom. They're still getting the same thing. We know that that doesn't work. We know that that doesn't work. And what is really being contended with here with trans women in sports is the idea of whether or not trans women are women, whether or not you accept that there is a kind of woman who exists that was assigned male at birth and that maybe lived some of her life as a male, being identified as a male, being given a name that she no longer uses, being treated as male by her family and peers, that that is a kind of woman who exists in the world. And there are men who were born, who were assigned female at birth, who lived part of their life being identified as a woman. That those are, that's just a kind of person who exists. That's just a kind of person who exists. And that's, it really boggles my mind that that's actually what we're debating, is over whether or not we can just get on board with the fact that, like, that's a kind of person that exists. Shaquille O'Neal is a kind of person that exists. Michael Phelps is a kind of person that exists. Sometimes there's a kind of person that exists whose lungs like process lactic acid at a different rate than other people's. And then he competes against those people and he's better at swimming because of the way that his lungs process lactic acid. And we don't go like, well, he shouldn't be allowed to swim then. That's not fair, because that's just how fucking sports work. That's just how it works. Is like, if Muggsy Bogues wants to be in the NBA, he needs to figure out how to play ball against Shaquille O'Neal. And if he can't figure that out, tough shit. And that's just how it works. There are some people who are 5'3", 137 pounds. And there are some people who are 7 feet, 325 pounds. There are some men who were assigned female at birth. There are some women who are assigned male at birth. That's just a kind of person that exists. And if we can't just get on board with that kind of person existing, then we are getting on the side of the team who wants to make sure that those people don't exist. That is the ideological opposite of the idea of accepting their existence, is fighting to exclude them from society, is fighting to erase them from society. So, man, it just really bothers me, especially that one. They got so many of you with that one. They just convinced so many of you with that one. And all of these different tactics that they use, they are intended to convince you. There's one more that I want to address, and then we're going to go to the comments. I've been talking for a long time, but there's one more. The other one that they use that they convince people with is that the real issue is bodily mutilation. So this is another thing that, you know, Spencer Cox was touching on when he talked about how we just don't know what the long-term effects are for these kids, is people will sort of use this term bodily mutilation. I did a TikTok video the other day breaking down this amazing interview that Jenna Friedman did with this guy named Don Grundman, great name, Don Grundman, who is a straight pride activist. And he starts off the video by saying that, you know, the problem with transgender people is that they are people who believe that in order to obtain happiness, they need to mutilate their bodies. So this is a line that he uses because that phrase, the way that it's phrased, again, it's meant to just be a surface level thing that feels intuitively correct. You're not for people mutilating their bodies, right? He doesn't use the word body augmentation or, you know, any kind of like corrective surgery or, you know, plastic surgery or anything like that, you know, gender affirming surgery, bodily mutilation. Those words are chosen really specifically because they have an instantly negative connotation. And the idea is to get you to go, oh, geez, he's right. I don't support bodily mutilation, and I definitely don't support bodily mutilation of children. Like, you don't support mutilating the bodies of children, do you? And you think to yourself, without any further investigation, without even considering it any further, you think, yeah, no, actually, you know what? Geez, that's the left going a little too far. Spencer Cox was right. The left, some people on the left are going too far. We shouldn't mutilate the bodies of kids, except for the fact that, like, every male baby that is born in the United States, well, you know, I'd say 80% of them, probably 90% of them, we cut the tip of their penis off when they're an infant, right out of the womb. We don't ask that kid if they want that or not. We just slice that thing right off. It's just a cultural thing that we do. We just started doing it at some point, and now we don't even question it. We're just like, well, I don't want my kid to have a weird dick. All the other kids have no foreskin on their dick, and I don't want my kid to feel weird, so let's cut his foreskin off. So you think to yourself, hey, I would not support bodily mutilation for children. But then you think, I would totally cut the tip of my kid's dick off. I don't want him to be a weirdo. I don't want him to feel weird in school, so like I'm going to cut the tip of his dick off when he's a baby. So no, you do. And you do, like, and instantly, Jenna Friedman, when he says this, because he thinks, you know, he's coming in with his inflammatory statement, well, it's people who want to mutilate their bodies. And she just goes, my friend got a boob job. You know, this woman in my yoga class got a boob job. And he instantly backtracks and changes and moves the goalpost, because instantly he realizes, oh yeah, that's right. I support bodily mutilation all the time. I'm totally fine with cisgender women getting boob jobs. I'm totally fine with cisgender men and women getting, you know, certain nose jobs, you know, getting a facelift, getting filler in their cheeks or lips, have no problem with that, getting gastric bypass surgery, tattoos, earrings. I'm totally fine with all of that stuff. So if we don't call it mutilation, if you just call it like body augmentation or, you know, just plastic surgery, just a surgery that people get to feel more comfortable in their own skin, just things that people do all the time. I've had people take an electric needle gun and draw doodles all over my skin because I wanted doodles drawn on my skin with an electric needle gun. And I did that a bunch of times and paid people to do that. Now my skin has doodles drawn on it with an electric needle gun. And nobody had a problem with that. I just did that. You could call that mutilation. You're mutilating your body. They disingenuously frame all of these issues to get you on their team. And it's working, and it's bumming me out. And I just really wish you would stop falling for it. I wish that so many people would stop falling for it. Because it's one thing for the people, for their constituents to fall for it. Like, that's just, of course, going to happen. But when I see leftists and liberals going, I support trans people, except I kind of get what J.K. Rowling's saying. That, like, we do need to make sure that we're protecting cisgender women from like predatory men who might go into bathrooms and attack women. It's like, cool, then you're falling for it. You're taking the bait. J.K. Rowling is disingenuously framing the conversation as though what we're actually talking about is whether or not we support protecting women from cisgender men who might attack them. That's not what we're talking about. And she knows it. We're talking about whether or not J.K. Rowling is willing to accept trans women as women and willing to grant trans women basic human dignity and basic human rights. That's what we're talking about. But since she can't be honest about that, she disingenuously reframes the conversation so that she can feel like she has a more reasonable position and so that she can convince you to be on her team. She wants to convince you that she's got a reasonable position, and it's fucking working. And what it all amounts to is fucking genocide. Okay. That's enough from me. Okay? That was a lot from me. But boy, this issue, it really scares me to watch it unfolding in slow motion, and it really bums me out. Katie Hoy says, right? Katie Hoy on YouTube says, right? The double standard. Honestly, who cares about what other folks do with their bodies? Who are they? The genital police? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the reality is they don't actually care. They don't actually care. They only care when it comes to trans people. It's a way, and they don't actually care at all. The bottom line is they just don't like having to acknowledge that trans people exist. They don't want to have to just acknowledge the fact that trans people are valid people, that that's a kind of person that exists, and that that is a valid way to live, that that's just a normal thing that exists in society. They can't come to terms with it. And they feel icky about it, and they don't like that they don't understand it, and they have a really toxic religious ideology that's probably baked in there somewhere too that makes them hate these people and wish these people didn't exist. So they come up with an argument to get otherwise reasonable and kind people on their team. And they say, like, hey, well, but we can't support mutilation, right? But the fact of the matter is they don't actually give a shit. They're totally fine with circumcision. They're totally fine with boob jobs. They're totally fine with all kinds of corrective surgeries on people's bodies. They don't actually care. They just don't want trans people to exist. Peter Steiner 6 on TikTok asks, are you a member of the Democratic Party? I mean, I'm not registered with either party. I'm registered as an independent, but like, I pretty much exclusively vote for the Democratic Party because it's the only viable option that I see personally in the current landscape. I wish we were in a state where there was more of a valid argument to be made for both sides and for independent candidates. And I wish we were in a situation where independent candidates or people with, you know, further left, more radical views had actual political power and had actual sway. And a lot of people will say, well, they're not going to unless more of us start voting for them. But like, yes and no, like we are in the situation that we're in. And I think I would be okay with letting Republicans win elections, you know, so that I can vote for the candidate that I want to vote for. So let's say, like, I really want to vote for Bernie Sanders. You know, I think that he's the candidate that most represents my values. Even though I know he doesn't have a shot of winning, I'm going to go ahead and take the L to vote my conscience, knowing that I'm going to contribute to Hillary Clinton getting less votes and possibly contribute to Donald Trump winning. I would be more okay with that if I felt like there were more valid ideas between the two main parties. The problem is that one party has lost the plot. One of the two main parties has completely lost touch with reality. And so I cannot, in good conscience, allow them to win. I have to try to oppose them at all costs. And my best shot at opposing them, and I know it sounds stupid to say I'm voting against the Republican Party rather than for the Democratic Party, but that is usually what I'm doing. And my best shot at doing that is to vote Democrat down the ticket, to just vote down the ticket Democrat and just say, like, I got to do this until Republicans understand that what they're doing is not a winning strategy, until they lose enough elections. I think what happened in the midterms was really good, but what we're seeing, you know, how they didn't do as well as they thought they were going to do. And there was a lot of conversation about whether or not their embracing of Trumpism and of the more extreme and radical parts of their ideology, whether the embracing of that has been beneficial to them or not, or whether it's been detrimental to them in these elections, because they're seeing in several elections time and time again that they're losing races they were expected to win. And rather than seeing them trying to chill out and be more reasonable, what we've seen starting off 2023 and heading into the 2024 presidential race is that it's full steam ahead on the radical fascistic policies that, like I said, 321 bills introduced in 2023 alone that are anti-LGBTQIA plus bills. They're just full steam ahead on selling out on radical ideology and extremism. And the difference between radical extremism on the left and radical extremism on the right is, on the left, it's kind of radical methodologies to achieve reasonable goals, goals that still would, in theory, make society a better place. Goals like making sure everyone has healthcare, goals like making sure that, you know, we tackle the problem of homelessness, goals like making sure that the police don't just have carte blanche ability to murder people in the street without ever being held accountable. You know, goals that would make society better, but maybe the methodology to achieve those is kind of radical. Whereas the radical right is trying to achieve goals that are just like divorced from objective reality. They're trying to achieve things like genocide. They're trying to just like get rid of people they don't like and just have, and just kill off people that they don't like. And I don't see those two things as being equally weighted in the slightest. So I'm not a member of the Democratic Party, but I vote Democrat, is my long answer to your question. What is your profession? Asks W Atlantic NB. You're looking at it. This is my profession. I'm a full-time content creator, podcaster, video maker, songwriter, actor. This is the stuff I do. Nuanced M asks on TikTok, then why are they so for increasing population by limiting birth control? You know, it's a good question. I don't know. It is really weird because you're right. Republicans don't want people to have safe access to abortion. And I say safe access to abortion because abortion's going to happen whether it's legal or not. We all know that. That's just the nature of abortion. It's going to exist whether it's legal or not. And we can either give people safe legal access to it, or we can have people going through abortions that are not safe and that will lead to more pregnant people dying than is necessary. But yeah, Republicans want all the babies to be born. No contraceptives, no birth control. They want all the babies to be born, but they have a problem with so many of the babies. It's really weird. And I think that this just boils down to, again, like not living in reality. So this, again, I think we can talk about the harmful nature of conservatives' religious ideology that, like I talked about earlier, the fact that like we indulge conservatives' religious beliefs all the time, and all kinds of religious beliefs that are very harmful for society and that don't make a lot of sense. We indulge them because so many people hold them, and a lot of people say that it's useful for them. And I think that there are people who it is useful for, and I don't want to take that away from anyone, that they're like, hey, my religion is useful for me. But by and large, we see in so many different ways how a lot of these like beliefs that are not rooted in any kind of evidential reality are really harmful and also harm the people who hold them. So this is one of those things that like the reason why conservatives and Republicans want more babies to be born is because of a religious belief that has been sold to them, by the way, that babies are sent from God, that God is giving that fetus inside of a person's womb a soul and a spirit, and that that soul and that spirit deserves a chance to be born and to exist and to be saved and to find Jesus or whatever. So it's this whole religious belief that like it's a sin to not allow that baby to be born. And so it's rooted in this like this concept that that you have to let that baby be born. By the way, I say that this was sold to them because conservative Christians didn't used to think this. They didn't used to actually believe this so strongly or care about this. They accepted the fact that like sometimes babies die in utero, and like sometimes people need to get abortions for medically necessary reasons, and they were totally fine with that. This was sold to them as a wedge issue in like the 70s and 80s by people like Jerry Falwell. And it was a calculated political move to galvanize voters the same exact way that they are galvanizing voters over things like critical race theory and gender ideology. It's the same thing. It's like people didn't used to care this much about it. They sort of just ignored trans people and were fine just letting them live in the fringes of society. But now that they're more in the forefront and there's more visibility of trans and queer people on TV and in movies, they're using this as a wedge issue to galvanize voters and to get voters out to the polls and to even pull over voters from the other side. But they're manufacturing the outrage. So they created the outrage around abortion. They created it to galvanize voters and to win elections. And it has stayed, and it is now a cornerstone of American conservative Christian ideology that, like, it's a sin against God to kill an infant in utero, even if it's medically necessary to kill to save the mother's life. It's a sin. What's funny about this, or what's perplexing about this, is that there is such a hypocrisy to be found, and a disalignment between their morality when it comes to thinking that the baby should be born, and the morality when it comes to how they treat the infant once it's born. And we all see this. We all know this, that, like, when you go to a pro-life rally and say, like, well, let's make sure that kids have universal pre-K, right? And that kids have free lunch at school, and that we're feeding children, and that we're taking care of children. Here's some papers to adopt. There's a bunch of kids that need to be adopted right now. You go up to a rally of pro-lifers and say, will you sign up to adopt these children that need homes and that need to be adopted? It's crickets. They don't want universal pre-K for kids. They don't care about giving handouts to kids. They don't care about making sure that kids have lunch at school. That's not their problem. That's their parents' problem. Their parents can deal with that. So there's this weird, like, we gotta make sure that all the babies get born. We gotta make sure that the population goes up. We gotta make sure that the human population keeps growing. We gotta make sure all the babies get born. And then when the babies are born, they're like, cool, we don't like them though, if they're gay or trans or non-binary. Don't like them. Throw those babies straight in the trash. We don't like them if they have substance use disorders, if they develop a dependency on substances and become addicted to anything. Throw them in the gutter. Don't like them. If they ever struggle economically to find their own way in life, fuck them. If they can't afford healthcare, fuck them. If they can't afford lunch at school as a child because their parents are struggling, fuck them. So it doesn't really make sense. It's a good thing. The question you ask, like, why do they want the birth rate to go up, beats me. And I do think that the answer actually is just because they've been told to want the birth rate to go up by their ideological leaders. They've been told that that is the good thing to want, even though it doesn't make any sense with the rest of their ideology. The rest of their ideology is like, yeah, but once you're born, if you're not white, straight, Christian, cisgender, fuck you. So, like, yeah. Let's see here. Fed Fishheads on TikTok asks, how often do you meet right-leaning people in real life? How do you interact with them if you have to? I meet right-leaning people all the time in real life. I'm from Salt Lake City, Utah originally. I was raised LDS. I have lots of right-leaning people in my immediate family and in my immediate circle of friends. I went to high school with a lot of right-leaning people. Most of my friends from high school remain to this day LDS and are very religious people who, most of my family is LDS. I have family members who listen to this podcast, who believe in a God that I do not believe in, and who believe in Jesus Christ, and that Jesus Christ is their savior. And that's not a belief that I share. That's a belief that I am perfectly happy to be respectful of and to allow them to have, and to not demand that they let go of if it's useful for them. And if it's something that they find beneficial in their life, I'm absolutely fine being respectful of it and not demanding that they move on from it. My request is always that they not use their beliefs to harm themselves or others. That's just sort of my carte blanche thing across the board. But I have friends who I went to high school with who regularly like to challenge me about my ideas because they see that I'm publicly sharing my beliefs and my opinions. And because they know me from back in the day, they come to me regularly and they want to talk about different things. And I will say this, when I interact with people who approach me in a spirit of like wanting to have a discussion, wanting to have a debate, I don't waste time pulling a lot of punches. It can be mistaken for being disrespectful. So when I even talk about like, you know, how I respect my family members' religious beliefs and religious stances, you could say, I listened to this podcast and it sounds like you were being very disrespectful of their beliefs. I believe in being direct and being blunt when I talk about these things. My family and my friends who listen to this podcast understand that like in this space specifically, I do not go out of my way to sugarcoat my beliefs and my positions. I don't find there being any use in me not being direct on my podcast. They don't have to listen to this show if they don't want to. It's totally okay if they find the show too triggering or difficult to listen to, but like this is my space to speak directly. The same way that when they come to me, so like when they're listening to this show, they are coming to my space to hear my point of view, and I'm going to be direct. I don't want that to be misconstrued as like disrespectful or mean. And it's the same way when someone approaches me who's on the right, who wants to have a conversation. I'm going to be direct with them and I'm going to be blunt with them about what I think about their positions. And I'm going to ask very direct questions. I'm also going to answer their questions very directly. What I normally find with people on the right who come to me and want to debate is I will spend a lot of time very directly answering their questions, and almost invariably, what they do is they just move on to the next topic. They never really are willing to like engage with the answer that I offer them when they ask me a question. They ask me a direct question. I give them as direct and honest an answer as I possibly can. And rather than going, interesting, and continuing the conversation in that vein, they just move on to a new topic. And it can be kind of frustrating. And sometimes I can lose patience with it and kind of go like, you're not acknowledging any of my answers. So it makes me feel like I'm wasting my time. But again, my goal will be to not waste either one of our time by trying to be quote unquote like nice, but to be really direct with them, especially if they're coming to me looking for that kind of conversation. Now, if I'm just at a family party and we're just having dinner and nobody's coming to me trying to have a political debate, I can absolutely keep it buttoned up and keep it locked up and keep it, you know, close. Like I don't need to like go to task with anyone in my family or any of my friends in a situation where it's not called for. It will only happen if they come to me and express the desire to have that conversation. And once that happens, I'm going to be as direct and blunt as possible. Death Panel Deluxe. Okay. On TikTok says, how do we convert the strain of bizarro Christianity into one that cares about their neighbor? I don't know. I really don't. I don't know. This is why I don't believe in wasting time trying to be nice. And I believe in being as direct as possible, that like, and calling it as it is and letting people know that like what they're participating in, if they're participating in this agenda to erase queer people, is they're participating in an act of genocide. And just letting them know clearly that like what they're doing is evil and is harmful and is detrimental to society. Being unflinching and unwavering and uncompromising in our ideals, calling a spade when we see it, letting people know when they're exhibiting bigoted or prejudicial behavior, trying to do so in a way that's not sanctimonious or belittling or rude, but that is direct and clear. Continuing to fight for the marginalized and the oppressed. And then just fucking faith. Hoping for the best. Having faith that the world is constantly moving in the direction of progress, even if it doesn't feel like it. Even if it feels like one step forward, two steps back sometimes, we are always trudging forward and having faith that with enough time and with enough persistence, we will continue to chip away. But yeah, I don't actually know. I don't actually know of any rock solid methodology to dissuade people of their more harmful and toxic beliefs. For the time being, it seems like we are more or less stuck with them. I think that's why I'm trying to shift my focus to convincing the centrists and those of us who are people who are mostly there, who are mostly liberal, who are mostly progressive, who mostly identify with progressive things, but are still getting taken in by some of these harmful narratives, who are still getting convinced to be really scared about trans women in sports or trans women in changing rooms. I want to put my focus there because it feels like those people are more reachable. And some of the more, you know, dyed-in-the-wool, hardcore, radical Christians sort of have to find it on their own if they're going to find it at all. Stoop Crone on TikTok says, when will they realize that Jesus was a socialist? Dude wanted to feed and house people without judgment. Yeah, it is very strange. The dissonance between modern Western Christianity and the actual figure of Jesus Christ as he is portrayed in their book is head-scratchingly baffling. And I hear Christians acknowledge this all the time. I know so many Christians who will say this, who will be like, it's so weird how many other Christians there are in the world who don't behave anything like what Christ said we should behave like. It's baffling that you have people like Joel Osteen, who's like Joel Osteen looks like a cartoon used car salesman, like a cartoon snake oil salesman shyster. Like Joel Osteen has like this greasy slicked back hair and this just like devilish smile. And he's just a multi-billionaire who flies around on private jets. And people are like, yeah, that's the guy. That guy is the guy who's preaching the word of Jesus. Jesus, who said that it would be easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. That's the guy. It is so bizarre that people have this book that's centered around this character who is 100% a socialist, who's just like, take care of everybody, love everybody, make sure everybody has food, make sure everybody has shelter, make sure everybody has healthcare. That's that guy. Don't worry about making money. Don't worry about getting rich. You know, be humble. That's their guy. Be kind in all things. Be kind and show love in all things. And their expression of their loyalty to that character is to just be like the most vitriolic, hate-filled people in the world who are obsessed with money, who think that money is a sign of righteousness and that money validates them and money means that they're good people. It's so bizarre. And I think it really boils down to just like how many modern Christians have no idea what's in the Bible. Have no idea what's actually in there. Have never actually read it or considered it on their own. Again, I think that it's not just Christians who do this. The whole reason why this political tactic of selling you an argument that is surface level and feels intuitively correct works is because that's how a lot of people in the world operate. Is they just let someone who seems to have a position of authority tell them something that feels intuitively right, and they just run with that. And they just go like, I'm not even going to think for 5 seconds about that statement that person just said. I liked the way it sounded. I liked the way it hit my ear. I liked the way it felt, and I'm going to run with that. And that's how a lot of people operate. And so a lot of people who are Christians are just operating based off the fact that like their pastor was like, the reason why I've got a $10,000 suit on and you don't is because God favors me for spreading his message. And that's how God works. And they're just like, sounds right. Sounds correct to me. Even though if they just sat for like 5 seconds and thought about it, they'd be like, I could have sworn that that's like the opposite of the message in the Bible. I'm pretty sure that's like the opposite of what the character, but they're like, I don't know, but the guy with all the money up on the stage said it. So I guess it's true. I guess that's what's right. It's wild. Oh, let's do one more. And then we'll call it. Ashley Beckman says on YouTube, says deconstruction is very painful. Feels like the identity I had was taken away. But once you see the holes in the logic, I just couldn't look away. That is another part of it. The reason why a lot of people don't want to look deeper is because often doing so is painful in all things. You know, the reason why people don't want to think deeper about the arguments that they've been taken in with surrounding trans people is because they might have to confront the possibility that they're a little bit prejudiced toward trans people. And that's uncomfortable. That's a deconstruction. The reason why I believe actually that J.K. Rowling actually thinks of herself as a person who is not prejudiced and who is being mischaracterized. I believe that in an act of self-preservation, of psychological self-preservation, she has convinced herself that she is being unfairly mischaracterized, because the possibility of being self-reflective and actually asking herself the question, could something that I'm saying be harmful to trans people, or could I actually harbor some sentiments that are harmful to trans people, is too painful for her. It's too painful for her to consider that. And also, that would mean that she would have to like agree with people who have hurt her feelings. A lot of people have called her a lot of mean names that have hurt her feelings. A lot of people have said things to her. People who really hate TERFs, trans exclusionary radical feminists, have said things to J.K. Rowling that have hurt her feelings. And she does not want to agree with those people. Just the same way that like extreme Christians, radical Christians, don't want to have to agree with people who have hurt their feelings, with atheists who have called them stupid or called them silly or said that like their beliefs are the same as a child believing in Santa Claus. That makes them feel small and like they're intellectually inferior. And if they actually examine that stuff, they have to agree with people that they feel bullied by. And that's difficult. So there's so many aspects of deconstruction that are very painful and very difficult. And I really believe that someone like J.K. Rowling has convinced herself that even someone like Matt Walsh, maybe even to a certain extent, probably not Matt Walsh. I bet if you asked him, you know, if you were in his crew of guys who sit around drinking whiskey and smoking cigars, they would just be like, no, I fucking hate trans people. They give me the heebie-jeebies. I fucking hate them. And I bet they'd have no problem saying that. But I think that someone like J.K. Rowling, and I think a lot of the people who are like, hey, I love trans people, I just don't think that they should be playing sports with the gender that they identify as. I think that they convince themselves that they don't have prejudicial feelings or prejudicial beliefs because it hurts to have to look at yourself in the mirror and go, am I harboring some feelings and some beliefs that are actively harmful to a historically marginalized group, a group that already just mightily struggles in society? Am I contributing to the struggle of that group? It's white fragility. It's the same as the concept of white fragility. The idea that like there are just white people who it's very, very hard for them to approach the idea that they might be racist against their best efforts and against their better judgment. That when they think about themselves, they're like, when I think about the word racist, that has a negative connotation. That's a bad person. A bad person is racist. That's not me. When I think about myself, I think about a person who's flawed and who makes mistakes and who isn't always right and who doesn't always know the right thing to do, but who more or less wants to do the right thing and wants to treat people fairly and wants to be kind to people. So how could I be that person and also be a person who has some prejudicial views towards gay people or non-binary people or trans people? How could I be a person who mostly wants to do good in the world and also be kind of racist? That's a difficult thing. That's an uncomfortable thing for a lot of people to sit with and unpack and deconstruct. So they don't. And then they fall prey to surface level intuitive arguments that make them feel better about themselves. Yeah, see, no, I'm not a bigot. I'm not a bigot. I just don't want us to be mutilating the bodies of little kids. I'm not a bigot. We just don't have enough data yet on what hormone replacement therapy will do to kids 20 years down the line. I'm not a bigot. I just want to make sure that it's mature grown adults who are making these decisions for themselves. I'm not a bigot. I just want to make sure that women who are assigned female at birth, who are raised as women, have the chance to compete fairly in sports. These arguments are designed to let you off the hook and say, I knew it. I'm not a bad person. And here's the thing is, like, I'll let you off the hook right now. You're probably not actually a bad person, okay? You're not. But you've been taken in by some people who have crafted their arguments to get you on their side, by people who are bad people, who do want to harm marginalized communities. And they've crafted their arguments specifically to get you on their team. There was someone in the comments of that Libs of TikTok post on Twitter who said, you just know that that kid is going to grow up and resent his mom for doing this. Of course, they used his pronouns. They used he, him pronouns for this little girl, because of course they did. And it was such an interesting comment to read, because all these people were going like, totally. That kid's going to grow up and hate their parents for aiding them in their transition at such a young age. And I just thought, like, are these people entirely unaware of the fact that, like, many trans and gay and non-binary people do have a very contentious relationship with their parents for the exact opposite reason? Are they completely unaware of the fact that, like, many, many people in the queer community don't have a good relationship with their family because their family was the opposite of what this mom is, because their family refused to accept them and refused to embrace them and support them and love them? Are these people not aware that, like, we've been doing it the opposite way for all of the rest of modern history and it has not worked? So they're seeing this one example of this mother who's choosing to support and love her child and accept her child as they are. And they're going, that kid's going to grow up to hate her. As though the opposite approach of not supporting your child and not loving your child and not accepting your child has ever worked. It's just a level of delusion. And I think it's a self-preservational delusion where they go, I'm not a bigot. I don't want my kids to hate me when I grow up. It's just a detachment from reality. They're just not, no one on that side of the argument is dealing with it in reality. No one is dealing with the reality that just these people exist. Period. And that's why we're having the problem. Hey, everybody, thank you for the comments. Thank you for the feedback. Thanks for hanging out tonight on both feeds, on YouTube and on TikTok. We had a really active feed. I really, really appreciated it. This episode went a little long, but I liked the conversation, so thank you. Thank you so much for being here. You know, for some of you listening, I'm sorry if that felt a little maybe like antagonistic or like I was instigating something or like I was like pointed. But again, I think that this situation that we're in calls for directness and bluntness. And I don't want to be pulling punches with this situation. We're in a very dire situation when it comes to the well-being of these communities. And they are very much under attack right now. And we need all the teammates we can get and all the support we can get. So thank you for being here. Really, really appreciate it. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or by going to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com, where you can find my TikTok albums. That's the only place you can find those. You can find all my other music on Spotify and Apple Music. You can find, you know, all my just regular albums. But my TikTok albums, now that's what I call a bunch of Austin Archer's TikTok songs compiled into an album. Volumes 1 through 4 are available on my Bandcamp now. Link in my bio on all of my social media platforms for those. AustinArcherMusic.bandcamp.com for those if you want to just type in the address. Patreon.com/AustinArcher if you want to support this show, if you want to support this podcast, the content that I make online. We can use all the support over there that we can possibly get, because This is my number one thing that I do. And I freelance with gigs, and you know, I have good times and hard times, and right now I'm having some hard times. I'm gonna be honest with you, financially. And I don't want to have to work at a restaurant again. I want to keep this as my job. So if you want to help me keep this as my job, I would love to have your support over at patreon.com/AustinArcher. Only if you can, of course. If you can't, I'll just keep having you as a listener and a supporter of the show. Love to have you here. Again, thank you for all the comments on TikTok, on YouTube. That's it. That's the show. We'll see you next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Love you so much. Bye-bye. Shouldn't mean that I take everything way too personally. Being self-absorbed should mean that I got passion and devotion. And being self-righteous should mean I got a great self-esteem.